Welcome to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. I'm Russ White. At 4:06 following news, I'll catch up with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon.
So I hope that everyone who sees themselves as a part of Team MSU will take this moment to just pause and reflect not simply on what's going to happen in Dallas or maybe in Arizona, but on that plus something else that's really valuable to them.
Then Kirk Heinze conducts a sustainability roundtable discussion on key economic, environmental, and social issues facing Michigan and the world.
Since we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. What are we going to do to make sure that we're good stewards?
MSU Today begins at 4:06.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today, back in the company of Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon. And President Simon, we've obviously got what the football and basketball team are doing. The debate team is highly ranked. We've got a Rhodes Scholar. Just talk about kind of the Spartan euphoria right now, how you like to best seize upon that to expose more people to what we're doing, or kind of what are the real benefits of just this great positive exposure?
Well, we could add the employment numbers from Ford and Forbes magazine in terms of business, or we have of the five or six programs in Comm Arts and Sciences, three are ranked number one. You could just go down the list of really positive accomplishments for the faculty and staff of Michigan State. And as I've said, I think athletics provides the front porch, the window for people to have a chance to feel good about the neighborhood, and then also look more closely at all the other things that we're doing.
And MSU is certainly a place where the academics and the athletics go hand in hand and really, if you will, have each other's back.
Well, I think we have people who represent the values of the institution. They're passionate about being the best that they can be in their chosen area. They're passionate about the students, athletes that they touch, as the faculty are about the students, and making their dreams bigger. And doing that in a sense of life skills that will extend beyond the playing field and for the faculty extend beyond the classroom. And I think it's been always part of that sort of big land-grant heart, that sense of purpose for the institution. And we just have people who are leading athletic programs who believe that and represent those values in their own way, as we do people who are leading academic programs, being our emissaries around the world, who believe that as well.
And when we had Jim Cotter on your podcast recently, I think you and Mark liked his term, the momentum era, because you're always talking about making sure we get better tomorrow than we are today. And I imagine that momentum and this exposure go hand in hand to do that.
Well, it helps because I think people have to believe in you and believe in what you do. And it reinforces back to the campus because it's sort of it provides energy and people then want to come back. Dan Gilbert was at the College of Business this week. Other alums that we met through the Rose Bowl actually, who had drifted away a bit because their jobs and their work took them to California right after graduation. And they love the Spartans. They love their university experience. They just were a bit disconnected. Those activities provide a way for them to become connected, but they're connected in entrepreneurial activities, in work in the film industry. So it's not simply connection back to see a game.
And President Simon, as we kind of reflect around the holidays and in between semesters, as you look back on 2015, just what are your thoughts or what are you reflecting back on that struck you this year?
Well, I think that this is as I think about the reason that places like Michigan State were created, to be good enough for the proudest and open to the poorest, to be really a booster rocket for opportunity. We were created in a very difficult social time for the country. If you think about the Civil War era, But out of that came great institutions, the Smithsonian, places like Michigan State, that were a way to really build bridges and to have then those bridges be a leverage for greater accomplishments for everybody, not just for a few. And so we think about then today and all the things around us. There are, again, very difficult social issues. The recession, if you think about the state of Michigan, the country, even the world to some extent, while we could technically, in my Federal Reserve role, say that, you know, we are out of it and the economy looks strong and growing, it doesn't feel that way. And we're still a place that has 75% of our students coming from families of $125,000 or less. They're very, very bright. So it's not about, you know, we're the place of real opportunity across socioeconomic class. And I firmly believe that, you know, education is the key to that, as it has always been. But not just sort of checking the box for a degree, but really taking full advantage of all the rough edges of learning that has to occur at a great university. And those are things that are difficult as tensions around us grow. But you have to really stay the course about what fundamentally makes you great and why we're here as a unique sort of societal institution. And so we have our, you know, sleeves rolled up and are working around the state or around the world on these really big challenges with people, listening and hearing their ideas. And the campus, I think, can benefit from the voices that are now being raised to propel us to evolve solutions that really fit the 21st century, not simply checking boxes for programs that were potentially designed for the 20th. We need to accelerate change. That's the demand. That's a legitimate demand of any organization that's valuable to society, particularly when it feels like the change and the impact of changes are very uneven. And then we have to have genuine inclusion. And it builds on respect, and it builds on a bravery and a courage that you can interact with ideas that are different than yours or that may be jarring to you. But at the same time, you have to do that in an environment that feels safe to interact with those ideas. And that if you say something that is different than what someone wants to hear, it will be heard in a way that's part of this dialogue and not just shut off. And so there's a lot of those issues that are important. And the pace and the urgency that goes with it is just fueled by the technology. And so we have to figure out ways to pick up the pace on some of those things so that it feels like that students are here are benefiting from those changes. I can say that the students here have benefited from a lot of changes that were put in place before they arrived. They take the neighborhoods for granted. They take the fact that we have the support of the 15 most difficult courses for granted. And that's the neat thing about being in a university, because we have 10,000 new people who arrive on the scene and accept things the way they are, and then they want to use as the baseline for change. The sort of the struggle with universities is that we have 10,000 new people who come in and that they are not always coming from perspectives that deeply respect discourse. They're not always coming from perspectives they've learned to listen to ideas that are not their own and think that that's all right. It doesn't mean they have to adopt them, but they have to listen and engage in them. And they've not always come from backgrounds as diverse, as cosmopolitan as the institution. But the reason they come here is for those things, to prepare them for the rest of their life in a world that will be more complex and more interconnected. So that's always that sort of neat thing about a university is that tension. And sometimes it gets a little bit higher than others, but it's still the neatest thing about a university.
Well, President Simon, you've already been very forward-thinking in those comments. But as you look even further into 2016, are there some particular challenges or opportunities or projects you want to talk about?
Well, I think that, to use Jim's phrase of momentum, we're really have to continue to sustain and that momentum. We have to find ideas that are the booster rockets for even not simply incremental change, but step functions in change and improvement in academic programs and across the university and with our partners so that they see what we're doing to be beneficial to them in that step change process. So I think, you know, but part of that will be continued to build on the strength of our partnerships in the state, around the world. You know, continue to be committed that the people we interact with deserve the best cutting-edge knowledge and the forward-leaning ideas. Whether they agree with them or not or accept them or not, they deserve the best of our thinking because that's what propels society forward. And as we sort of reach out further to Detroit, other urban core within the state, as we continue to make sure that agriculture remains food systems, food security at the top of the list for Michigan's prosperity and the world's prosperity, those are going to be some things that we're going to have to really look at and continue to look at. I mean, we were very forward-thinking, I think, in terms of the commit we made to water positions. If you think about any cover now, who would have imagined that aquifers in the Midwest were being problematic or what's happening in California? And it's not necessarily an episodic. There are some fundamental issues. And water, food, energy, that intersection, we really have to think through those very, very carefully and not, again, take what's around us in Michigan for granted. But to make sure that we're stewarding that resource, but we're also leveraging it for future generations. And those are going to be difficult conversations, while at the same time, our faculty member was the canary in the mine shaft on the issues of lead and the water in Flint. So it's not just an ethereal discussion. It's a real discussion that has to be dealt with today and tomorrow. And so, I think there's lots of just saying. I can go on. I think the Bait team's doing really well. We've had great job placement for our students. I think that's going to continue as the economy gets better because people want Michigan State graduates. I think the recruitment of faculty and in big data, health and engineering interface, the research opportunities in Grand Rapids that I think are going to be just another booster rocket for I think not simply for us but for the community and for the state. There are lots of those kinds of things. And then I worry, as all do, that that we find the wisdom in our society to worry about the health and safety of others around the globe. And this is a scary time. But in that scary time, that we keep our gyroscope centered on our values and centered on our commitment to the world.
Well, President Simon, as we close, any closing thoughts, holiday or year-end related for our Spartan listeners out there?
Well, it is a great time to be a Spartan. There's no question about it. We're so proud not only of football teams but of Rhodes Scholars and debate teams and all of these academic programs that get maybe not the front page of a newspaper. So I hope that everyone who sees themselves as a part of Team MSU will take this moment to just pause and reflect not simply on what's going to happen in Dallas or maybe in Arizona, but on that plus something else that's really valuable to them and their families. And learn about more about that and what Michigan State's doing in that area. so that we generally are Team MSU through all of this, across all the aspects of what we do, and that people also take a moment to just enjoy friends and family.
President Simon, thank you again for sharing your insights with us, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
That's Michigan State University President Luanna K. Simon, and you can keep up with her at president.msu.edu. And I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, this week we feature what's become a tradition of the program. We call it the Sustainability Roundtable, and it's really a panel discussion focusing on some of the key economic, environmental, and social issues facing Michigan and the Great Lakes region, and in some cases, the globe. With three guests who are back for the third time to share their expertise and insights. So three times is a charm, they say, I think. But it's a pleasure to again welcome Diane Byram, who's a partner in the Lansing-based Byram and Fisk advocacy communications firm. She's also a member of the MSU Board of Trustees. We have Mark Shupan, who's the chief executive officer of Kalamazoo-based Shupan & Sons, Inc. We also have Dr. Doug Bueller, who's the interim dean and director of the College of Ag and Natural Resources. He's also serving, wears another hat, his day job, and that is the director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Welcome to the program, all three of you. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Great to be back.
Good to be here.
Let's do something a little differently this time. I'd like to start by asking each of you to say a bit about your organization, your enterprise, and maybe one or two things that have been particularly challenging from a sustainability standpoint over the last year or so. Diane, would you like to kick that off?
Sure. I'm a partner with Byram and Fisk Advocacy Communications. We're a private sector firm that deals in public relations, issue management, issue advocacy, and everything in between, from media relations to crisis communications on campaigns and elections. And I'm part of a growing sector in our business in agriculture, and we work across the Midwest. So I see the agriculture not only from a Michigan lens, but also across the Midwest and as far west really as Colorado. And so some of the challenges that I've seen is really how can we get agriculture to the table and be, as Greg Page with Cargill says, climate discussers. Agriculture needs to be at the table. It's the old adage, you're either at the table or you're on the menu. Mm-hmm. So that's one of that. And then the whole issue of water quality. And how can agriculture, again, fully embrace best management practices and not be satisfied with the status quo? We must always be better tomorrow than we are today. Luanna Simon, president of Michigan State University, she says that on a daily basis. And that's true in how we address water quality issues in agriculture.
Okay, and I imagine we'll be coming back to some of these issues too. But, Mark, how about Shupan & Sons?
Well, we are a company that's kind of diverse. We've been in business since 1968. The industrial recycling, we handle about 700 different companies in northern Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan, primarily in the aluminum area. We distribute aluminum and plastics with facilities in Kalamazoo, Dayton, and Toledo, where we also in Kalamazoo produce a number of parts for the medical, automotive, and the office furniture. We also are in the beverage container recycling, where we handle Michigan's deposit law. We have two facilities, one in Grand Rapids and one in Milford, that work on that. And we also are involved now. A couple of years ago, we bought an e-scrap, electronic scrap recycling operation, which has grown tremendously, and we handle about 300 schools that we do. So anyway, so what has bothered me?
Yeah.
Well, it's in the industrial recycling. When you look at oil and you say, how could oil be so low? Well, people don't notice, but the metals in the last 13 months have done nothing. The values of metals, nothing but continually decrease. They talk about up and down markets. Well, this hasn't been up and down. And it basically, a number of companies that are in the industrial recycling right now are going out of business. Last week, the largest one in the Chicago area went bankrupt. So it's been very difficult, and it goes back. We have a tremendous oversupply of production in the world now. When China needed everything as they were growing, they wanted to import. Now they have actually built enough in their internally that they really don't need much from the rest of the world. And as their economy has gone down, now they are the big exporter, and it's causing problems for a number of companies.
Okay, and we'll stick with MSU Ag Bioresearch. Doug, talk about the College of Ag Natural Resources could take us into next week. But how about MSU Ag Bio?
What we are, our major role really is we are the segment of Michigan State University that's responsible for research in food, energy, and the environment. So we deal with a wide range of topics in terms of understanding problems, solving problems, and advancing science as it relates to food, agriculture, and the environment. So when I look at some of the things that are going on, clearly we're always looking at how do the sustainability issues fit across our research mission. Where does that fit in? How do we, as we hire new people, as we fund new research, how does this all fit in? The other part, I guess, back to use Mark's line of what's bothering me is, I think, is really we've developed so many extreme views on so many of these issues. And kind of, I guess, combining a little bit of what both of you said, we have to come to the table, and if all we're doing, whatever way you view the world, if you're looking at it in a very extreme way and you're not willing to compromise, you're not going to be at the table. And so I think that's a part, whether it's climate, whether it's water, whether it's genetic modification, a lot of screaming and a lot of Twitter and maybe not a lot of real dialogue.
195 nations recently reached an accord which seeks to slow the rise of greenhouse gases and hence reduce or at least combat rising temperatures. Reaction to the Paris Agreement. Who wants to start with that one?
I can take it first.
Thank you.
I think the good news is that they did reach an agreement and there were signatures and it called for more transparency in what each nation was doing, as well as an acknowledgement that greenhouse gases and carbon sequestration was a real issue. So if you have to look at a bright spot, I think that's forward movement. I was disappointed that agriculture didn't get a high profile. There's probably many reasons for that. We can discuss them around this table today. But at least there was the acknowledgement. And I will say food security really is a broad term, and it encompasses a lot of climate change, climate variability in the food system, whether it's the vulnerability of the availability of food or the food safety or the availability of water to grow crops and nutrition. All of those things come into play with food security. So it was part of it. Didn't get the high profile. Vilsack, Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack, was over there. He had a lot of interesting comments on climate smart agriculture. What does that mean? I think really we can define that ourselves here at Michigan State University in Michigan, but also the climate hubs and how they're going to be utilized maybe to a larger degree than what they have been in the last year. So that was my take. I think it's positive. Still a lot more work to be done, a lot more definitions around agriculture's role in this whole climate and the reduction of greenhouse gas.
It sounds like, Diane, you and I have been reading some of the same reports today. So I'll just start off saying that I would concur with what you said. And I think one of the things about, you know, agriculture is it is a very integrative industry. And so everything that's going on in the climate and in the world is really going to impact food production. I think another piece of it is that though, you know, an agreement like this is really a long-term agreement, but, you know, when we really look at what we have to do over the next 5 to 10 years to continue to respond and adapt to what's going on, particularly in a state like Michigan, with a lot of perennial crops, we've got to continue to stay on top of this and make sure that not only are we looking at the long term, but we've got to make sure that we're on top of some of the short term things. Here we go again with this, you know, atypical warm weather. And I was at the Great Lakes Fruit and Vegetable Expo last week, and there was already some concern amongst some of the tree fruit growers and so on about, you know, what this type of weather is doing. And so, you know, whether it's El Nino, whether whatever it is, but we just continually are being challenged with extreme weather events. And you look at it again from the perspective of my job, it's to continue to figure out how do we get information out there, how do we develop new tactics to either, in some cases, protect against too warm of weather, but also too cold and untimely snaps and big changes in weather. So
about you, Mark, is particularly from the standpoint of maybe this international dimension. I mean, the Chinese and the Americans kind of came together in order to get this thing done, but there are still some major issues, and you're involved in international marketing and sales. But what's your take on this agreement?
Well, I think just the idea that 195 companies or countries can talk about having an agreement. Normally, you wouldn't be able to find that many people that would be able to decide where to eat in a restaurant, let alone all the different things that were involved here. And as time has gone by, and I've read more and more, and we're seeing what's going on, I think the doubters are fewer and fewer of what's – and whatever is happening – and exactly the causes, if we can make a difference, that's what's really important, because we're looking to the future and our grandchildren or their children, and what can we do, even if the world is changing and warming, is there something we can do to slow the process even, then we should be doing these things.
It occurred to me that part of this agreement was predicated on a couple of assumptions. Number one, that there'd be a lot of peer pressure to do the right thing and do the proper monitoring and reporting. But there are not legislative mandates in terms of what these countries – I mean, essentially, it's going to be voluntary. That could very well be an issue. I mean, there's a lot of trust here, isn't there, that has to be taken for granted for this to work?
I think that's exactly right. A great deal of trust. And frankly, we're in the midst of a presidential debate, a presidential election, and this whole conversation around what can we do on with weather vulnerability or climate change, however you want to discuss it, it is about adaptation, mitigation, and strategy so that we don't waste precious resources. There's lots of ways to frame this. That's for the benefit of humankind, both today and into the future. And somehow we've got to get beyond the polarization. And I think Doug Buehler said that right up front in his opening comments, that the polarization is what is bringing us to our breaking point or to our knees as a country, not just on a climate conversation, but on a whole host of conversations where if we would come together and find common ground, we could do a whole lot of good and make significant progress. And I really hope that's where we get at the end of this whole presidential election and the next general election in 2016.
Yeah, it certainly is an interesting thing to watch. And I think, you know, can we somehow kind of reopen a debate to really open up and have some of these discussions to look at some of the real issues here? And you know, coming from the scientific standpoint, you know, we talk a lot about this because, you know, we've talked about education and the importance of that. And if people really understood agriculture, they'd love us. Well, I've been at this for quite a few years now, and we were saying this when I was a graduate student. I can tell you I wasn't a graduate student all that. It's been a long time ago since I've been a graduate student. So I think what we're talking about, and you know, as we look at our communication strategies, is how do we kind of reassess what we're saying and how we say it. And how do we start rebuilding some trust? Because you look across these surveys of trust, you know, there's so little trust anymore. And if you don't have trust, you know, where do you go? There's no trust in the government. There's very little trust. There's declining trust in science. Corporate America is not doing so hot in some of these issues. And I don't know how we start rebuilding those things, but I think we've got to think about it because I think it has to happen.
Well, related to that, and Mark mentioned it earlier, the science is certainly overwhelming with respect to climate change. But some research done right at Michigan State University suggests that there's still a lot of American people who don't find the issue important or, frankly, don't believe that there is climate change. I mean, it's the science. I mean, but people refuse to look at the science. So how do you respond
to
that?
Well, I remembered the author, Crichton, who passed away, but wrote a lot of books. And people liked, you know, Drama Strain. He was kind of I remember one of the books that he had. It had to do with environmental and all the things that were going on and a lot of funding that the groups were getting in this book. And then all of a sudden, at the end, he gives his opinion. And his opinion, now he's passed away, was, you know, some of these things need a lot more work to be able to prove. Well, my concern is unintended consequences. It's always good to say, hey, this is what we want to do. It's a good thing. Let's just go do it. And then you find out, yeah, what actually happens? How does it affect people? How does it affect companies? For example, today we're so excited that fuel is low. the price of gasoline. So what is going on with that? Well, people are driving more miles, which is more carbon. They're buying different vehicles that are not as environmentally friendly. So it's just an example of what you have to look at when you think maybe you're doing the right thing and maybe it doesn't come out exactly as expected.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. You're tuned to a sustainability roundtable discussion on key economic, environmental, and social issues facing Michigan, the Great Lakes region, and the world. Here again is Kirk Heinze.
We're back with the Sustainability Roundtable panel. Diane Byram, a partner in the Lansing-based Byram and Fisk Advocacy Communications, Mark Shupan, Chief Executive Officer of Shupan & Sons, and Doug Bueller, who is the Director of MSU Ag Bio Research. Doug, I want to come back to something you mentioned, Diane mentioned a little bit earlier, and that's the whole issue of food security, agriculture. Maybe we could throw GMOs in there. It's always struck me as rather ironic that some of the same people who point to science to justify or legitimize GMOs are the same people that ignore science when it comes to global warming and climate change. Isn't it interesting how politicized some of these things have become?
Well, it certainly has, and you could say the vice versa on your last comment. It is
That's
very
right.
interesting in that. And one of the things that I've kind of come to in terms of my thinking, particularly if you want to talk about GMOs, is I think what we have, one of the things that frustrates me is that we really have a kind of a confusion, or you know, genetic modification as a scientific method is really just a new and more precise way to move genes. There are some products that have been developed using that technology that the public is not real comfortable with. My biggest frustration right now isn't that necessarily that the public has some discomfort with those products. It's that they are GMOs and GMOs are them. And that's what really worries me, is because I think we have so much potential and there's newer, more precise technology coming on, but there's so much baggage now that people will ask simple questions like, well, is this a GMO? They won't ask, well, what genes have been put in here, or how will this product benefit me, or what are the risks and benefits? That's what really worries me, because as the technology moves forward and there are more products that are created that may be very beneficial for health, for storage and things like that, you know, back to reducing food waste, all those kind of things, there will be people will reject them out of hand because of the way they were created, not exactly what they are. And I think that's something that really concerns me right now, is that, you know, and it's not an easy thing to describe to people. That's part of our problem, as I
that
said
is.
Before,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, well, somebody like me or a lot of the scientists that I represent, they'd love to give you a 45-minute description of CRISPR and gene editing and all this kind of stuff, and that's just, and so, I don't know what the right solution is, but I think we've somehow got to figure out how to kind of decouple the products from the process.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's a huge concern. We have to change the conversation and the way we talk about it. And that's not done overnight, and it's not done easily, and it's not an inexpensive or a short-term endeavor. We didn't get here overnight, and it's going to be a long haul looking forward. But I think if you start to look at it in terms of healthiness, people want healthy food. GMO food is healthy food. And the utilization of precious natural resources, because GMOs now allow us to use less water, have drought-tolerant seeds. And so it helps address this reduction in carbon that we're talking about, too. So it does have a climate impact to it. And people just, frankly, they want local food. They want to know where their food is coming from. And they're much more comfortable with that story of that individual farmer that is growing that crop. So make that connection to the local producer, healthy, and then its impact on carbon reduction. I think we might have an opportunity to change the dialogue somewhat.
Well, my expertise in this area is fairly limited. I have to tell you, when I was teaching up in the Thumb, my first year, almost 40 years ago, and I saw this thing fall off a truck in the fall, I said, how'd they get a coconut up here? It was a sugar beet, so that'll tell you I had a long way to go. Now, I've learned a lot, but the one thing, I look at this thing, and I say, the problem a lot of times is demonizing what we don't know. Because we don't know enough about it, then it must be bad. And it's almost going, you don't want to see the same thing that happened, like the movie The China Syndrome, okay? We don't ever want nuclear energy again. Well, if you look at nuclear energy, I mean, it certainly has got its challenges, but we know from environmental, carbon, everything else, there is nothing better. Now, how do you dispose of it? Those are some other challenges of the... But you just want to make sure, because you don't understand, that you're against it.
Mark, that's a good segue, because one of my questions here, and it's one that we ask a lot of guests, but we talk about Michigan's energy future and the Michigan Energy Office. We also talk about what is America's energy future. I'd like to get your reactions as you're looking maybe 5 to 10 years down the road. What is our energy portfolio going to look like, given all the different options that are out there right now?
Well, I like natural gas, and I say that. We just, again, are replacing a fleet of 16 semis that we pick up containers for our recycling, the deposit law. But the value at that time when we originally did it, there was a huge difference between diesel and natural, and it was financially, it was great. Well, it isn't right now. Now things will change. But when we look at the idea of we're gonna work on our carbon emissions, there's a way that makes a huge difference. But you also are going to have conflicts. Again, we want natural gas, but we don't want fracking. I mean, what's going to win out of there? I think what will happen, too, we have finite resources, so we just have to make sure. I mean, it's nice to have wind power, I'm sure, and solar power and everything. But and I'm sure they're going to be discovering new things all the time. But we just have to make sure that we're using our investments correctly, because it makes such a huge difference to everyone in the U.S.
Well, I would just throw in, I mean, clearly I think there's need for balance here. I think what you really, when you look at what, you know, the potential of different alternative energies are, and you see how that stacks up against how much energy we use today in our traditional traditional forms, it's really staggering. But another part I'll throw in, and this is, you know, at risk of sounding like an old 60s and 70s guy, but I think we really undervalued the good old, it used to be reduce, reuse, recycle, and the amount of emphasis on reductions and reuse, I think, you know, as was said earlier, with the low energy prices, the car companies can't make enough SUVs now. Well, you know, sooner or later, that oil is going to become more expensive again, and it's still going to be finite at some point. And I think balance across energy sources, balance across, you know, recycling, reductions, reuse, I think we really need to look at a very broad portfolio, because there's not a silver bullet out there. I mean, our investments in our traditional energy system are huge, and we're just not going to flip this overnight. So I think we've really got to look at it as an incremental process that's going to take a lot of different things.
I would agree that it's going to be a diverse portfolio. Michigan has an opportunity, though, however, because we have an aging coal-fired power plant fleet that needs to be replaced. They're old, they're inefficient, they're extremely expensive for upkeep, and you're getting new federal air quality rules that are going to really make them not economical. So we're at a crossroads in Michigan. So what does that energy future look like? So, and I do agree with Mark. I think natural gas is very viable. And for baseload power, we're probably going to look at natural gas. And then we will integrate it with renewables. And we will start with all of this by energy efficiency, making sure that we're not wasting energy. And that's the cheapest power you're ever going to buy, is that you don't have to pay for because you've saved it. So energy waste should be number one. We should build new baseload with natural gas and integrate it with renewable energy and take advantage of technology that's coming online. Think of where your smartphone is today compared to the old landline. Most people don't have landlines anymore. You're going to be integrating technology with battery technology, renewables, baseload, and the energy future is going to look very different in the next 15 to 20 years than it does today.
We've got a couple of minutes left in this segment, but one of my producer Russ White's favorite topics is battery technology. And the advances in battery technology, and this whole issue of storage. Even if you do have the renewables, how do you store it? Comments on battery technology, and are you optimistic about battery technology? Where are you with that one?
Well, I'm far from an expert on it, but I am kind of interested in it, because every time you start looking at, well, is it time to buy a plug-in car? And you read a little bit about the battery technology, and you see some of the things that are going on at places like MSU and other places. That looks to me like something that has incredible potential for all sorts of ways. So I think that's something that's going to be, you know, it may be another 10 years or so, but, you know, it's just like a lot of things. When do you take the plunge? Because the batteries of today may become obsolete very quickly. But from my limited knowledge of that technology, I think we may be in for some very interesting discoveries that are really going to revolutionize some things over the next decade there.
I tend to agree, and all you need to do is read the headlines. Ford just made an announcement here a week ago. They're doubling down on new cars that will be electric vehicles. They clearly see that as the future. The R&D that's going to be in this state is pretty exciting in terms of economic sector, job growth, university research. So that's pretty exciting, and it will integrate with the electric grid. At the end of the day, you're going to see an integration between the cars we drive and the electric power that we utilize in our homes to power and heat our homes. So it's pretty exciting what the future is going to hold.
When it comes to batteries and the technology, I think there's going to be a disruptive technology. When I say disruptive, somebody on their own or somebody that maybe is not with some of the bigger company is going to find something that works, and it will be disruptive. But it'll be good in the long run. There's all kinds, and I think you made a comment too on some on the recycling thing. Going back to that, we have to do a better job for batteries for sure, and keep them out of the landfills and make sure. And now we just had a company come in from Japan to talk to us about recycling rare earths, which and all the rare earths pretty much are controlled by Russia.
Right.
By China. Excuse me. Wrong country. But so we're looking at new things that have to do with batteries for sure.
Well, certainly that recycling part seems to be very, very important, because if those elements continue to be critical, there's going to have to be recycling, because there's definitely a finite quantity of those materials.
Russia certainly has rare earths, but they can't get them out of the Caucasus Mountains, right? Yeah, but they do have the natural resources. They just can't get at them, unlike the Chinese. One thing that we've talked about before we started broadcasting the program, but this whole area of resource management and cradle to cradle, whether you're talking about water, whether you're talking about energy, land, air, that sort of a thing, some of the challenges, I mean, sort of a holistic, your holistic notion of resource management from 40 or 50,000 feet.
Well, I think this whole idea, and it seems to have fallen out of favor a little bit, but we talked a lot about kind of, you know, sort of the footprint of different things. And I think that's something that we need to take a stronger look at. What is really the bottom line? What goes in, what comes back out, and what's sort of the net gain or loss? I think we need to look at that a little bit harder. And again, when we look at some of these rare metals that we've talked about that are so critical, how are we going to manage those? If in fact, of course, if there's a new technology, maybe there'll be something completely different. But to me, the bottom line is kind of what's the bottom line impact? And, you know, when you talk about local foods, well, what is the impact? You know, what is the cost if we're shipping, fruits and vegetables from California, we're basically shipping water across the country. How do we balance those things out, and how do we look at things in a more holistic manner? I think is something that we really need to do more of to understand the life cycle and the footprint and those kind of things.
But food, energy, and environment, that's the mantra of MSU Ag Bioresearch, right?
There you go.
Right.
Well, I agree with what Doug Buehler has said, and there's beginning conversations around, like, the value of water and starting to look at crops that you grow in certain parts of the country or the nation because of availability of natural resources, and water is going to be one that's probably first in line there. And then just a more robust conversation on best management practices and knowing that it's not a stagnant conversation. You always have to be looking at what you can do better tomorrow than you're doing today. And it all comes back to efficiency and how can we best utilize and not waste the precious natural resources that we have on Earth.
When I look at it macroly, I always talk about why Michigan is such a great place to do business and why it's a good where there are opportunities here. You go to some of the other states, you go to Atlanta, they don't have the water they need for manufacturing. They absolutely do not. One of the things that we do have at this point in time is we do have that water. But as you say, how do we take care of it? There was a saying, I'm not sure if I get it right for sure, but it says we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. And I know that's kind of pie in the sky, but what are we going to do to make sure that we're good stewards?
And when you think about those future generations, I mean, that's sort of on a philosophical note, maybe to close here. I mean, what kind of a legacy do we want to leave for our children and our grandchildren? Some of us around this table have grandchildren and maybe great-grandchildren someday. But, I mean, this generation, what kind of a message or legacy do we want to leave for future generations?
Well, I always talk about the difference between success and significance. Success sometimes being measured by what your wallet is, what your car is, what your house is, what they think is in your bank book. But when you talk about significance is what do you do in your life for others? Have you made a difference? Can you make a difference? And we can. There's no doubt about it. And I certainly hope I'm at a point in my life at my age, I'm not looking for resume values. Eulogy values are a little more important. So I'm going to do whatever I can to make this to leave this place better than I had before. But we have to look not just United States or Michigan or Kalamazoo where I live or whatever, but the challenges we have in the world today. And again, with places that don't have water, where they have droughts, where they don't have enough food. And this is going to affect all of us. It's going to affect us right here. Just as it isn't just across the pond from us. And so we need to do what we can to help make this a world that is sustainable, not just for the United States, but for all the people that live on the planet.
Well, it's really hard to top what Mark has just said, and I think it reflects exactly what I'm thinking. And the challenges that we have today are world challenges, and the world is a much smaller place than maybe it was when all of us were growing up. And I certainly want my grandchildren to inherit an earth that is better than it is today, and that there's prosperity for them and their children. And I think one person can make a difference, and you have to spend your time every single day trying to make that difference.
And I would just add, there's no question that our generation has made plenty of mistakes. Rather than beat ourselves up on it, let's make sure that those aren't repeated and we learn from those and we move on and do better things.
The adage about, those who fail to observe the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them. Well, this has been, I thank you for those philosophical observations, which are very consonant with some of my own. Our Sustainability Roundtable, an annual gathering with Diane Byram, a partner with Byram & Fisk Advocacy Communications, Mark Shupan, Chief Executive Officer of Shupan & Sons, Inc., and Doug Bueller, the Interim Dean in the College of Ag and Natural Resources, also Director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Happy holidays to all of you, and thanks so much for doing this again. It's always a pleasure doing this roundtable.
It's fun as always, Kirk.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from the Spartan Life. Here's one of my favorite nuggets of wisdom. Every medium has a point of view. Challenge it. Brian Kay, a Twitter friend, sent me the following tweet this week. MSU Scott W., how do I know I can believe what you're saying? My answer? Ask around. If you hear differently, tell me. In the coming weeks, the political campaign season will be kicking in. We will again be inundated by half-truths, scary sound bites, and unsubstantiated charges, all designed to generate fear, uncertainty, and doubt about some candidate's opponent. Hundreds of millions of dollars will be spent to try and convince us not to vote for someone else. By the same token, we are daily bombarded with messages designed to get us to do something, buy something, like something, hate something. The more shocking the images, the more lurid the charges, the better. When you find the little voice inside your head saying, "Wow, I can't believe what I just saw," listen to it. Challenge everything, but be willing to do your homework. The world is complicated. The issues we face don't have easy solutions. If they did, we would have already figured them out.
We all bring our own prejudices and self-interest to the table, too. Preconceived notions about how things should be can easily dominate our own thinking. Do your homework. Special interests, and that's not necessarily a bad term, we all have special interests, spend time and effort to try to convince us that their interests are in our best interest. That may or may not be true. You get to decide whether or not it is. But try to understand all points of view before judging. That often takes work. The truth isn't always clearly visible. You have to peel off layers of hyperbole, obfuscation, and misinformation to find it. The people who create commercial messages and political attack ads count on the fact that most of us won't bother to fact check. Their biggest fear is that we will. The same goes for whatever positions you take, decisions you make, actions you take. They will be challenged. And that's a good thing. Questions and criticism can help us clarify our own thought processes. In some cases, this may modify our point of view. In the best case, it will force us to do our own homework to ensure that our actions are in line with our values. If they aren't, have the courage to go through the sometimes painful process of changing them. Your homework may reinforce your confidence in staying the course, or it may inspire you to explore a new direction. The worst thing we can do is to do nothing. Be an informed voter, consumer, leader, team member, and friend. Challenge everything, especially your own paradigms. Do your homework. You won't make everyone around you happy all the time, but you will make better decisions and most likely enjoy more productive outcomes. So, Brian, don't take anything I say at face value. Challenge it and do your homework.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
MSU AgBio Research is really centered around leading research and developing scientific discoveries in the areas of food, energy, and environment.
Doug Bueller leads MSU AgBio Research.
Our history bases us in Michigan, but we've really expanded that mission to the nation and to the world.
MSU AgBio Research has more than 300 scientists representing seven MSU colleges.
We're very interested in continuing to build international linkages because of the importance of what we do and the global nature of agriculture and the global nature of a lot of the problems that we currently face.
MSU AgBio Research is leading research and scientific discoveries in the areas of food, energy, and the environment in Michigan, the nation, and around the world.
The core is that we do research on food, energy, and agriculture. The reality is that those three things are important to everybody every day of their life.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu.
WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.